Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go! Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you need to know, headed into Monday morning's action. 800-224-2004. Call in the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listeners. So make sure you call in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. At SportsMap Radio. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. Fun hour playing ahead. Thompson's top talent. Who are the stars? Who are the highlights? Who are the names that we need to know following Week 12 action in college football? Plus, TCU holds on to win. We done having this conversation about who they've played, how they've played it. No, I'm not going to go into that. USC, big, big win. Big win over the likes of UCLA. What does this mean for their chances in the college football playoff? And Michigan gets a win, but at the cost of potentially its star player. How will that affect the game, in the game, in the game, on Saturday, in the game? We'll talk about that in about 30 minutes, but I start the hour off today with this. I hate that we can't have nice things. Now, here's what I mean. I loved Justin Fields this past year. I think I was the only person, Michael, if I'm not mistaken, national pundits across the country, who after, I think it was the Giants loss, we continued to praise Justin Fields' name, and everyone else said, no, Justin Fields is terrible. Guy's a bum. Bum. Loser. And then we even heard it on our own network. I heard it from multiple people on our own network. Shame on all of you on this network who decided to give up on Justin Fields. Here's the problem. Justin Fields got carted off in the game yesterday against Atlanta. And the main reason why is because he took so many hits. I want you to go back. Do me a favor. There's a sack by Grady Jarrett. There is a sack by Grady Jarrett in the fourth quarter where he just goes straight up A-gap. Like, he absolutely just obliterates the likes of Justin Fields in the backfield. Watch the interior offensive lineman. I don't know if it's Lucas Patrick. I don't know if it's Larry Borum. But he misses the block, and at the last second, he just goes ahead and puts his hand on someone else to be like, oh, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't my fault. Like, that's the worst part. Is that, like the offensive line is knowingly going out there saying, we're going to get this kid killed. And it stinks for them because, as of now, they had an opportunity to win the game, feel very good about themselves. And instead, they're sitting at 3-8, and Justin Fields might be out for a while. Just damn it.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Snap comes. Handoff goes. Right hand side is DeMicardo. Down he goes in the 23. So you got to get your field goal unit out. 15 seconds. Plenty of time. Take your time, fellas. You're 10. Relax. You're at 9. Griffin Kale. 41-yard effort. Middle of the field for the win. Snap. Hold. Kick Griffin Kale, plenty on it, and Griffin Kale has nailed it. Bow! How about that, boys? The Frogs survive here in Waco.
Brian Estridge with the call on TCU Radio, and with it, an undefeated season right around the corner. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, but just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. What a gutsy performance. What an absolute gutsy performance. In fact, there's only one word I can use for it. Bazooka. Now, for those of you that don't know what bazooka means, I'll give you a hint. Sonny Dykes calls his hurry-up field goal unit offense, or special teams, whatever you want to call it, bazooka. And the reason why is because you got to shoot it out of the cannon, and if it hits, it explodes. That's exactly what it takes. And you go back and you watch this game, and you go back and see the way that field goal happened by Griffin Kell, you need to be impressed by it. So, here's what we're going to do real fast, just out of curiosity. Michael? We're going to do this with the audience. I'm going to play you, literally, the time. I'm going to start the timer on from the second that they had a third down call all the way up until they made the field goal. Ready? Start the clock. So TCU in this game need to come back from being down by 13 points late in the fourth quarter. Max Duggan just had an absolute phenomenal game. Never once faltered, never once felt the pressure. In moments of adversity, stepped up in such a critical moment. And by the way, at this moment, the gate kick went through. Do you understand how fast that those things happened in that game? Do you understand how fast getting on the field, making that kick took? I was even halfway through my rant, and the kick was already over. That just shows how impressive it takes for a moment from Griffin Kell, who, by the way, most kickers, they need to go through their three-step drawback. No, I'm just kind of lined up, said, get the ball out, and he couldn't do anything else because if he moved, it would have been an even longer field goal, and it would have gone 45 yards because it would have been a false start call. Like, that's how fast that this offense looked. TCU, once again, just steps up in the face of adversity and does not flinch. And what's really interesting is people want to talk about, well, late in the game, you know, the defense didn't play well and they were going to deliver strikes and Max Duggan was balling out with his top weapons. I am so glad that we brought that up because I heard so many people denying what we saw from TCU and their comeback performance against Baylor. I bet you didn't know this. The three key players in this game, besides Max Duggan, were Kendre Miller, who rushed for a touchdown and averaged 4.1 yards per play. Quentin Johnston, who had a big, big, big 36-yard gain. And Savion Williams, who averaged 13.5 yards per catch and had three catches of over 20 yards downfield. All three of those players were on the sidelines for the final drive. All three of those players were dealing with some type of lingering injury. Sonny Dykes didn't want to risk it to put them out there and then potentially lose them for the Big 12 championship game. So he sat them for that last drive. So Max Duggan connected with his backup running back, his number three receiver in Tay Barber, and took off with his legs to go ahead and put themselves in the position to get the Gunnar Kiel kickoff. That's what happened. That's what happened in that last drive. Griffin Kell had to wait and hope that his offense was going to be able to put him in a situation where they could win. Oh, and by the way, did it by literally doing what they did all season long, run the football, see their windows of opportunity, took it, advanced. Just another gritty performance. I know it's so interesting to talk about TCU because TCU is not a big-time brand, but they're sitting at number four, and they're finding ways to play in the second half, and they're a second-half team, and they just close out games in stellar fashion. And most people would say, well, that doesn't look like a college football playoff team. Well, here's the thing. Where are you moving TCU this week if you're not moving them up? Or keeping them at number four? Because here's the reality. Look at every other team that surrounds them. Number one, Georgia, 16-6 win over the likes of Kentucky. Couldn't close it out late in the game, so what they did was they just allowed Kentucky to play their style of football, and eventually, lo and behold, they were able to hold on for a 10-point win. Michigan won by two, thanks to a late Jake Moody field goal against Illinois, an Illinois team that was playing with more passion and heart because of the situation going on with Brett Bielema, and we here at SportsMap Radio send our condolences to the Bielema family during this difficult time. Oh, in Ohio State, the score reads a 13-point differential. Take away the fumble recovery for a touchdown in the final closing seconds. This is basically a 3-point game for most of the entire second half. Oh, and by the way, Ohio State was down at halftime. USC goes down to the wire with UCLA. Can you really make an argument with their strength of schedule that they belong in that same category? And Tennessee lost. So where are you moving TCU? Who's moving up to the number four spot? Clemson? Alabama? LSU, you're not doing that. You're not. You may not like TCU, and I understand it. TCU is not a blue blood program. TCU does not have the glitz and the glamour of the Big 12, such as Oklahoma or Texas. They're not in the same category when it comes to recruiting, and they certainly are not in the same category when it comes to rich history. But that's the thing that I love about the Big 12, and that's the only reason why I'm a very big proponent of watching Texas and Oklahoma leave for the SEC. Because now we get to have a new opportunity where the next team steps up. Who is the next Oklahoma? Who is the next Texas in this conference? TCU has the money because of where they're located in Fort Worth. Not only that, they have a facility and a complex that is getting rebuilt every single offseason because they realize we need to be able to contend with the Texases and the Oklahomas in recruiting aspect. They have a really good coach who knows the vicinity pretty well and is pretty well built in the history of Texas football, in Sonny Dykes. Oh, and by the way, they're sitting at 11-0 for the first time in over a decade, and they have an opportunity to go 12-0, potentially 13-0, 14-0, and 15-0. If anybody else had this schedule, if anybody else had this record, we would not be talking about TCU having to win out against Iowa State, and then whoever they have to play in the Big 12 championship, whether that be Texas or Kansas State, we'd not be talking about them having to win out to guarantee their spot in the college football playoff. If this logo, instead of a horn frog, was burnt orange and had horns on it, yeah, we'd say they, as long as they win the Big 12 championship, they're in. They can lose next week, no problem, no harm, no foul. If this had a maroon with the cream-colored outside stitching of an O and a U together, say the same thing. But because branding does matter, that's why we don't view TCU as a legitimate contender. Guys, they're battle-tested, they're proven, they've played five ranked teams. Not only that, they've played probably one worth being a six who's just had a couple of bad hiccups throughout the season. And Dave Aranda left everything out there. Max Duggan had a Heisman moment, found a way to just continue to utilize his legs to his strength, picked up enough first downs, gave his kicker an opportunity. They're well-coached. I mean, Joe Gillespie's defense just completely turned the switch in the second half. I mean, if you go back and watch this game, they had like 210 rushing yards, Baylor, in the first half. They had like 30 in the second. They basically made this offense one-dimensional, and Blake Shapen couldn't live up to the task for Baylor's offense passing. Like, that is what it was. And then you see the way they come back, they fight, they nearly go ahead and tie the game. Max Duggan gets redemption moment after missing Kendre Miller for a quick little two-point conversion because he tries to deliver a dart. I mean, you go back and you watch this game, and you just see pound for pound, TCU belongs in the conversation. It's not the fact that they're battle-tested. It's not the fact they've played legitimate competition. It's the fact that they've done this week and week and week and week, and they've never once faltered. Like, every single week I watch TCU and I'm wondering, is this where they mess it up? Is this where the problems start happening? Is this where it all comes to an end? And at some point, I just gotta say, no, it's not. And the reason it's not is because it's not gonna happen. Like, TCU at this point, we can accept them. They're gonna be an undefeated team. They're gonna be undefeated going into Arlington. Not to mention, they're a really fun team. I mean, this was an organization that last year finished 5-7 after letting go of a legend. I mean, an absolute legend, not just in Texas football, but in college football in general, Gary Patterson. And Sonny Dykes comes in, and within one offseason, turns this team into not just one of the more legitimate college football playoff contenders, but the risers of the Big 12. That's going to sell. That's going to do a lot of things for recruiting. That's going to do wonders for NIL. And don't think boosters are not paying attention. Boosters are seeing what Sonny Dykes has done with limited funding in his first year. Imagine what they do when they give him $5 million, or they give him $7 million, or $10.2 million. Oh, it's coming. I promise you, wins happen. When wins start coming up, and they start piling up left and right, money does too. So, congratulations to TCU. I've been high on them all year. Michael's heard me. I mean, literally, if you listen to any of our promos, we literally hype up TCU as much as possible, because they're a good team. And they showed you why they're not only a good team, but a damn great one going into the final week of college football. 800-224-2004, another team that is ranked inside the top five. Not in our poll, not in the JSI poll, but in the AP poll. For the first time since 2017, USC. What I'm about to say may piss off some people, and I know that we have an audience in Oklahoma City, so bear with me. I know you're not going to want to hear this, but I think we have to address it. You have to be impressed with Lincoln Riley's first year at USC. Hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you have to be impressed with Lincoln Riley's first year at USC. You don't have to like him. You don't have to think that he's an amazing coach. You don't have to think that he's, you know, the next Nick Saban or in the same conversation of Kirby Smart and Nick and maybe even Dabo Sweeney. But you have to be impressed with what he's done in year one. I mean, not only was this a guy who took over a program that finished 4-8 last year, but really has not had a sense of direction since this 2017 season. Like, that year when they found a way to go down to the wire against Penn State with Sam Darnold at quarterback, that was the last time USC really looked like USC. And in year one, basically, what Lincoln Riley did was he said, hey, I'm going to go ahead instead of trying to build a culture, I'm going to go ahead and work the transfer portal, I'm going to work USC's branding to my advantage, and I'm going to fight for a Pac-12 championship in year one. I'm going to fight for a college football playoff championship in year one. It's challenging. It is. Like, USC, for as much crap as I give them, because if they deserve it, because they haven't really played anybody in terms of when you look at the level of competition to where Tennessee and LSU and even Alabama, like, you can make the argument that they've played better competition. You can make a better argument that Oregon and Utah and Washington and UCLA have played better competition. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at this USC team, they're so well put together. They're so well balanced. They just feel like they're a veteran roster because if you want to know what, they kind of are. Like they just Lincoln Riley went deep into the transfer portal, and he found his leading running back. He found his leading quarterback. He found one of his go-to receivers. He found a second one that immediately made strides in this past game against UCLA. He found a third one in Brendan Rice. He found his leading sack artist. He found an absolute stud in the secondary from Colorado. Like, he's built a team out of misfits from other programs that just come in and immediately have found success. And yeah, does the defense worry me? Absolutely. Should I view this team as a legitimate college football national championship contender? Probably not. And you know what? I don't think I'm wrong because, again, you look at this defense, they allowed UCLA to still put up over 400 and I think it was, 513 yards of offense. So there's still flaws with this team. But they're 10-1 for the first time since 2017. They're ranked inside the AP poll in the top five for the first time since 2017. And you're looking right now at Caleb Williams. I don't know how he's not the front runner for the Heisman. And I don't know if that's fair or not, but you look at the way that he's playing and also with what he has left on the table. He's got a game against Notre Dame, a very good Notre Dame team that has rapidly improved since the last time we really talked about them. Not to mention they also have the Pac-12 championship, which feels like right now it's Oregon's to lose, but they still have the Civil War coming up, so that's going to be a really big matchup to see between them and Oregon State. But you just look at this USC team and you can't be impressed. You can't help but be impressed. And at the end of the day, the main reason why I'm more so impressed than anything in a 48-45 win is not because of the on-field play. It's because of the coaching. I mean, most teams, when you're down 14-0 after the half and you drive twice and you can't score, like you can't get in the end zone because you get a turnover on downs and get the punt, usually that's where you wave the white flag, especially against a physical team like UCLA. Like, UCLA is not that same level as, say, SEC programs or even some Big Ten programs. But they are one of the more physical teams in college football this year. And they're more physical than a lot of teams in the ACC. And they arguably are the most physical team in the Pac-12. But for them to be able to fight back, for Caleb Williams to throw for 500-plus yards, for this rushing attack, losing Travis Dye, to average 4.7 yards, and their lead back in Austin Jones averaged 5.7 yards and two touchdowns, that's all coaching. So regardless of what you feel about Lincoln Riley, regardless of how you feel about what happened at Oklahoma, he's 10-1 in his first year and is fighting for a Pac-12 championship. And if he plays his cards right, he's fighting for a college football playoff appearance in year one of what is expected to be a lengthy, beautiful era in college football. When we come back, Thompson's top talent. Who were the stars of Week 12 in college football, and where is this team headed? We'll talk about that right here on Just Saying It, part of the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Thompson's top talent. This is part of the show where we go back, look at college football, decide our winners, decide our superstars, and who deserves a little bit more praise. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Give me your thoughts on who should win these awards every single week. But until you do call in, Michael, start the music.
QB of the week.
I can't believe I'm going to be talking about him, and I don't want to go into too much detail because I'm going to talk about him in about 15 minutes, but Spencer Rattler at South Carolina. Spencer Rattler entered Saturday's game against the Tennessee Volunteers. The Tennessee Volunteers, who just needed to win out, and they were going to make the college football playoff with, if I'm not mistaken, 11 touchdowns against 9 interceptions. No, 8 touchdowns against 9 interceptions, so more interceptions than touchdowns. Finished the day with an 81.1 completion percentage, a passer rating of 234, 30 of 37 for 438 yards, 6 touchdown passes. This, without question, was the game of his life. Not only that, this was the performance of a lifetime that you will see in South Carolina. And I've told you, I've mentioned this multiple times, Williams-Brice Stadium, the most underappreciated, undervalued, under-the-radar night atmosphere in college football. You see why. You just found out why. Absolutely phenomenal. This is what a lot of South Carolina fans expected when he left Oklahoma to go join up with Shane Beamer. If he comes back next year, which he still can, watch out for South Carolina. I mean that. I really do.
running back of the week.
I think it would be hard to go anyone else. Raheem Sanders at Arkansas, once again, just is so dominant between the tackles. He moves, he glides, he makes it look easy. There's a reason his nickname is Rocket, because the second he hits that second and third level, he is jetting his way into the end zone. 232 yards, 9.7 yards per run, 3 rushing touchdowns on 24 carries. Once again, just figuring out ways to manipulate, maneuver past the second and third level of defenses and easily find his way into the end zone. What an absolute gutsy performance against Ole Miss and Arkansas. Congratulations. You are bowl eligible once again underneath Sam Pittman.
Wide receiver of the week.
I think an A.T. Perry for Wake Forest just makes too much sense. 10 catches. I think he averaged 11.9 yards per catch. 3 touchdowns on the day. Wake Forest really need a rebound win after losing back-to-back. They get it over to Syracuse. They're putting themselves in the driver's seat for at least a potential 9-3 season. So credit where credit's due. Love this for them. Love this for A.T. Perry. He's going to be a name that you think a lot of draft communities watch for in the next couple weeks. Got the size, got the hands, got the ability to win after the catch. Plus three receiving touchdowns. He ended up being the difference maker in the game. So credit where credit's due. There's a reason why Wake Forest once again continues to win. And it's because of the 1-2 combination they have with Hartman and A.T. Perry in the passing attack.
MVP.
I'm going to give it to 2 people. They're on the same team. Lincoln Riley, got to give it to him. Took his team to a 10-1 record in his first year in the Pac-12 of a new conference while just working the transfer portal to his favor. And then his quarterback. 470 passing yards, 74.4 completion percentage, 2 passing touchdowns. He also ran in a touchdown. Caleb Williams is just on a new level over the past several weeks. I mean, this is a guy who, since playing against Utah, has thrown for 411 yards, 380 yards, 268 yards, and 470 yards. Now, he has had back-to-back games with interceptions, but during that same span, he's also had 14 total touchdowns. Oh, and that's just passing. He's had a grand total of 18 total touchdowns if you add in rushing. Just an elite playmaker. As of this morning, I feel like that he's going to put himself in the driver's seat to win the Heisman because of who he has to face off against. Really, really interesting game now going against USC. I mean, going against Notre Dame this weekend. Going to be a very close eye on this one.
Defense of the week.
There's only one pick. It's Clemson. I mean, I don't give a crap if you're Miami, if you're Miami of Ohio, if you're Miami, Miami, Texas, Miami, Tennessee. Like, this is a Power 5 program, and they held a Power 5 program to under 100 total yards of offense, not to mention 1.2 yards per run, 3.8 yards per pass, 2 total turnovers in the game, 99 total yards. Like, guys, I'm not sure you watched this game. I went back and watched part of it. There's really not enough analysis I need to go through. They're just a better team. They're well coached. And I think everyone knew that Miami was going to have a little bit of a struggle this year. I didn't think it was going to be this bad. But man, oh man. I mean, 99 yards of offense, you get the belt. Like, if you're a Power 5 team, beating another Power 5 team and holding them to under 100 yards of offense, congratulations. You are the defense of the week. There's not a question about it.
Upset of the week.
It's Louisville over North Carolina State, and we picked this one. I thought that Malik Cunningham coming back was going to be beneficial. I thought that the fact that you don't have Devin Leary for NC State put them in a damper. And it just feels like Scott Satterfield has turned a corner at the right time to where he's saving his job. You now go into this game against Kentucky. There's an opportunity for there to be a lot of success. There's an opportunity for there to be a lot of highlight moments for this game. So credit where credit's due to the Cardinals. Found a way to win. Found a way to win on the road. And found a way to get a massive, massive upset, which we picked.
Best bet of the week.
Vanderbilt plus 14.5 over the likes of Florida. This was our favorite bet of the week last week. I said that I thought Vandy was going to be able to hold the momentum. And playing, especially at home, was going to do a little bit of wonders. Thought they were going to lose this game, but they didn't. Instead, back-to-back wins in conference play. Credit where credit's due. Oh, and by the way, this is our best bet. So maybe sometimes you should listen into the show.
And best game.
I think it's USC-UCLA. I mean, there was over 800 yards of offense, over 85 points scored. Back-and-back, blow-for-blow, 2 really good quarterbacks just figuring a way to deliver that last punch. And ultimately, a turnover did it. Got to give a lot of credit where credit's due to UCLA. But USC, better team that day.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
This holiday at Total Wine & More, when you find a new favorite single-barrel bourbon, Cabernet, or Chardonnay, or the perfect gift for anyone on your list, you'll know that you found something special. For all the lowest prices, find what you love, love what you find, only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Please remember to drink responsibly. Must be 21 years or older to order.
Here comes a blitz, picked up initially, Rattler crossing route, got it. And that's Jalen Brooks at the 10, the 5, Jalen going for it. Touchdown, Carolina!
Coach, you told your team this week that you didn't want last week to define the kind of team they were. How are they so resilient tonight in getting this upset?
We got a resilient bunch. I love these kids. They work their butt off. And no matter what happens every Saturday, they come back to work every Sunday and have like a better week of practice than what they had the week before. I'm so happy for them. So happy for our seniors. I mean, I've been telling people we got a good football team. And we sure as hell showed it tonight.
That was ESPN's Holly Rowe on the call. Spurs Sportscast Radio with the play and a win for South Carolina. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, which is saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's the reality of this. I have said multiple times on this program about this wonderful place called Williams-Brice Stadium. Hopefully one day we actually get to go visit it. Hopefully Michael and I get to go on a little bit of a road trip, you know, during the summer. I think it'd be a lot of fun to go explore these college football vicinities. And South Carolina is absolutely on the bucket list. Main reason why? Two, actually. Number one, Williams-Brice Stadium. Love the atmosphere. Love the nighttime feel. Been there before. Absolutely horrifying place to play if you don't prepare yourself for it. And number two, hang out with Shane Beamer. Because Shane Beamer just seems like the ultimate cool kind of dad that you want to get in your corner, drink a beer with, ask about life questions. Maybe it's because of Beamer ball. But it doesn't really matter because both things were very true in this game. Play at Williams-Brice Stadium and come unprepared. You're going to feel the horns and you're going to feel the wrath. And that's exactly what happened to Tennessee in a 63-38 victory for the Gamecocks. So here's the funny thing. Let me just break this down for you real fast. Nobody picked. Nobody and their mother picked South Carolina to win this game. Nobody did. Yours truly actually even said that South Carolina was not going to win this game. And I thought the main reason that South Carolina wasn't going to win this game was because they didn't have a running back. I mean, if you go back and you realize they were down both their lead backs going into this game. Marshawn Lloyd was out, ruled out on Wednesday. You also had Christian Beal-Smith, their transfer that came in, was ruled out on Thursday. So they were down two backs. And Spencer Rattler has been Spencer Rattler all season. He's basically looked like 2021 version right before he got benched for Caleb Williams. All season in Columbia. So many people want to talk about Marcus Satterfield, the offense coordinator, being fired. They were looking for reasons to let him go. And here we are now on Monday morning, and Marcus Satterfield is beloved in Columbia, and Spencer Rattler feels like a hero. Actually looked basically like Tom Brady playing down 28-3. And South Carolina is now a win away from its best start in over 5 years under second-year head coach Shane Beamer. So that's a lot of things that I take away from this. Here's the main thing I take away from this. They're building something very special in the likes of Columbia. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Because here's the reason. When you look at what this team was last year, they were 6-6. They didn't have a quarterback. I mean, they were at one point playing a graduate assistant at quarterback because he had a year of eligibility and he was the best option they had left on the table. So that's where this program was a year ago. And they went bowling. They finished 6-6. They actually got the Duke Mayo Bowl bathroom. And everyone remember that one where Shane Beamer just got covered head to toe in mayonnaise and still literally makes my skin crawl. Don't know why, but it does. Here we are, 4 years later, 7-4, having momentum. By the way, they're a 14-point underdog this weekend against the likes of in-state rival Clemson. But are you betting that 14 points at this moment? I'm not. And the main reason why is because you literally just saw how special this team can be. Oh, and let's not forget, this is a game that's going to be played at Clemson, so it'll be a day game. And so far, Clemson has never had a loss at home underneath this current regime over the last, what was it now? what, 8 years? That doesn't matter because the way that Tennessee, I mean, the way South Carolina is playing is phenomenal. Here, let me just give you a rundown of how this game went for those of you that don't understand just how dominant of a performance it was. Touchdown, 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 end of half, punt on a three and out. Touchdown, 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 end of game. Literally every drive except for the one where they kneeled down to go into the locker room and the first drive out of the locker room in the third quarter, touchdown. That's how dominant a performance it was. Six total touchdowns for Spencer Rattler. They moved the ball on the ground without any ease whatsoever. I mean, this was just such an easy, dominant game. 4 yards per carry, three rushing touchdowns, nine total touchdowns in the game. Oh, and by the way, they averaged 11.9 yards through the air. Juice Walls, immediately looking like a future number one. You have Josh Van having another solid game. Two touchdowns, 38 yards per catch. Jalen Brooks had a nice day. Jaheim Bell had two receiving touchdowns. I mean, this is exactly what you want if you're South Carolina. Oh, and by the way, you can utilize this to your advantage to where I don't think people understand. You just sold Spencer Rattler and Austin Stogner, two former Oklahoma players on Columbia, because of they knew Shane Beamer. They knew the offense. They knew it was going to be run there. Imagine what you do when you go into a transfer's house this offseason. Imagine what you do when you go into a recruit's house this offseason and say, hey, we just beat the number five team in the country soundly. Would you like to be a part of this? Oh, watch what we did. Watch what we did with this quarterback, who everyone was ready to write off at about week six. Watch what we did with this offense without a run game. Imagine adding you in the backfield. This does wonders for recruiting. This does wonders for NIL. This does amazing for the transfer portal. And so many teams right now, we're viewing them. We're all saying, hey, who's going to be the next big-time team? Who's going to be the next Michigan State that just works the transfer portal and makes it to the college football playoff or gets 10-plus wins? Why not South Carolina? It's in a good location. It's in the SEC. There's certainly going to be games to where you're going to have attention every single week. Not to mention, it does feel like that there's going to be some bit of regime coming slowly coming up. Tennessee, good team. Kentucky, good team. Georgia, good team. Want to play against the best. Want to beat the best. Want to be the best. Go ahead and come to South Carolina. That's the way that I view it. That's the way I think that everyone should view it at this point. South Carolina is building a culture, and if you are Shane Beamer, you cannot be more proud of your team going into this weekend, regardless of what happens, because you have an opportunity to go 7-5, which would be an upgrade over last year. You have the right pieces in place to where this team feels pretty confident about themselves, and lo and behold, here's the biggest thing of all. This is not the end. It's only the beginning. Imagine what you can do with another full offseason to recruit. Imagine what you can do with another full offseason to work the transfer portal. And imagine what fans and what players are seeing in this game where every single drive just is like butter. You're just slicing through it. It's a smooth sailing. Just rub it on down. Boom. In for six. That's what you have. That's what it is. That's what you saw from the likes of this South Carolina team. I mean, this was an organization that just a few years ago was finishing 5-7, 4-8, and had no direction underneath Will Muschamp. They have an opportunity to go 8-4. And honestly, they have an opportunity to go 9-4. They're this year potentially going to be the Arkansas of 2022. I mean, 2021. That's what they are. Oh, and not to mention, they have a really good thing going because if I do like where this team is, at least offensively, it's going to be a very easy sell for South Carolina to build a program. Now, let's turn our attention to Tennessee. Tennessee, for starters, our thoughts and prayers are with Hendon Hooker because nobody wants to see him end his career this way. Torn ACL, season done, now going to go off to the pros, become hopefully a franchise quarterback somewhere else. So hopefully there's a lot of credit to them there. But, man, I mean, this is bad. I mean, and don't get me wrong. Three touchdowns early in the game to keep this thing close. I mean, at one point, I think that it was 31-24. So there was at least a moment where you felt like maybe Tennessee would be able to come back. But this is the weak point. This is the problem that we saw all year. I mean, again, we've mentioned this multiple times. You had a really good game against Kentucky passing. So everyone felt confident in the passing attack and everyone felt confident in the pass defense. It has been an Achilles heel and a crutch all season. You saw why. You saw why in this game against South Carolina. I mean, again, it's not the fact that Spencer Rattler had a career day and had the highest passer rating in college football this season against the number five team in the country. It's the fact that he averaged 11.9 yards per throw, and basically every play was a first down. That's where you have the concern. Tennessee, they no longer control their own destiny. And unfortunately, there's absolutely zero shot they will make the college football playoff, just like there is for Alabama. And the main reason why that I say that is because they're not going to have a conference championship attached to their name. Not only that, they're going to have two losses on the schedule. And not only that, you look at the losses that they have, Alabama's losses are to the two teams that at one point were viewed as college football playoff contenders. This is a South Carolina team that's still going through the rebuilding process and is probably a year or two away from actually contending for the likes of the SEC East title, let alone the college football playoff. So it looks a lot worse when you're a Tennessee team. And the problem is that when you lose early, so a team like Oregon losing in week one, nobody's going to worry about that in week 9 or week 10 because it's been so far away. But when you lose in week 12, it's fresh in the voters' minds. And it's not that this is the only loss. There's two losses. So this stinks for Tennessee because of, even though they've done so many good wonders underneath Josh Heupel in year one, and there's so much room for development, and it feels like this Tennessee program is on the way up, it just shows you how far away they truly are from being a legitimate contender. I did not think that Tennessee was going to be a college football playoff contender this year. I did not think Tennessee was going to be in the running. In fact, I actually said at the very start of the year, one thing. Michael, would you like to roll the clip on what we predicted for Tennessee's record this year?
I have them going 9-3. I had them losing to Alabama. I have them upsetting Georgia on the road. I had them losing to Kentucky. And I had them losing to South Carolina.
So even though we didn't pick this game initially because of we were very nervous about the line, I told you that this was going to be a game. Oh, by the way, this is show you how well we actually do our research for the show. Michael, do me a favor. We picked South Carolina to finish with what record? And who did they lose to?
I think it's kind of a middle ground. I think that they're right there in the middle. He's going to be a mix of 2020 and a mix of 2021. Good balance. I think that he's going to build an immediate contribution with Antoine Wells, the receiver from JMU. I think he's going to build an immediate contribution with Austin Stogner and Jakeem Bell. I have them going 8-4. Losses to Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, and Clemson.
I'm so close to being 100% right on that one with South Carolina. The only loss that they have is to Missouri, and I have no idea how they dropped that one. If they find a way to beat the likes of Clemson, I'll call it a switch. At least they lost to a pair of Tigers. 800-224-2004. Before we go to commercial break, I do want to talk really fast about Michigan, because Michigan is a team that I absolutely love because they're physical, they're old school, they're nitty-gritty, ground and pound, they punch you to the face, and they're not afraid to get in your face and just say, what are you going to do about it? Because you saw that once again against Illinois. It's just so funny how every single week they go out of that tunnel in Michigan Stadium, in the Big House, and you just know a brawl's about to occur. Because here we are, once again, third quarter, starts rolling around, you have a brawl. But the problem is that when I look at Michigan right now, they are not hot at the right moment. In fact, they are getting ice cold at the wrong time because they just lost their best offensive piece. 800-224-2004. There's no telling the status of Blake Corum moving forward. There's none. But Blake Corum is this offense. And if you don't believe me, look at the numbers. So J.J. McCarthy finished with 208 passing yards, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. If you take out Blake Corum's 108 rushing yards, this was a team that finished with 60 total rushing yards. Not only that, they would have averaged less than 2.2 yards per carry. Now, again, this is against a very, very, very good Illinois team. I think people forget that Illinois entered this game as a top 5 run defense, a top 10 pass defense, and a top 10 total defense. That's how good of a defense that they are. But if you take away Blake Corum, who is your superstar, your coup de grace, the reason for your team's success, now you have concerns. Now you have major concerns going into rivalry week. Because here's the deal. You can't expect J.J. McCarthy and Ronnie and Roman Wilson and Ronnie Bell and Cornelius Johnson and this passing attack to find its rhythm against a top 10 defense that Jim Knowles has put together in Ohio State. By the way, on the road, I might add, in Buckeye Stadium. You don't feel comfortable about that. And it's not only the fact that Corum is not potentially playing in this game. By the way, if he's at 80% healthy, he's going to give 110% on the field. If he's at 90% healthy, he's going to give 120%. And if he's 100% good to go, he's going to give everything in his body to give this opportunity to win and finish the year undefeated. Like, they're going to do all that. But if he's not, this is an offense that does not have the passing attack right now. It does not have balance when it comes to running the football outside of him. And Donovan Edwards also is out. So I worry about Michigan. They're a good team. They've played physical football. And they are, in my opinion, the best team in the Big Ten when fully healthy. But when you're down your X factor, you're going to put yourself in the back hole. And right now, Michigan is not only down their X factor, they're down their sole reason to potentially why they could go undefeated. We'll be back here on Just Saying It right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
I usually try to add in something very late as part of Thompson's top talent, but I'm never able to actually fully go through with it, mainly because of what happens with our overall timing. But I want to give a quick shout out to the likes of Mohamed Ibrahim of Minnesota, who not only fought back from yet another terrible injury last season, but literally has been the heart and soul of this Golden Gophers team for the last 6 years. After finding a way to return for another season, he has now set yet another record. Following a game against the likes of Iowa, he now ranks third all time in Minnesota's history for rushing yards. Not only that, his 51 career rushing touchdowns in just 38 games is a Minnesota record, and he just set the record for the most 100 yard straight games with 18 in Golden Gophers history. Ranks fourth all-time in rushing yards, has the opportunity to finish as high as number two, potentially even beating Darrell Thompson's record. So, congratulations, Bo. You've earned it.